Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We're going to be doing a number of programs during the summer months, taking a close look at area institutions of higher learning. Our colleges and universities are held in high regard all over the country. They range from 2 to 4 year institutions, large to small, public and private, with a diverse range of students. There are many things that set them apart as well as similarities. We'll be looking at all of these things and more in our discussions. We're beginning this series with the University of Missouri St. Louis Chancellor Tom George. Most know, and in the interest of full disclosure, I want to make sure that you do, that St. Louis Public Radio is licensed by the university. Tom George, thanks so much for being with us. Good to see you.
Thank you, Don. Good to be here.
We mentioned before going on the air that this should be a time for things slowing down for you, but so far you haven't noticed that.
That hasn't happened yet. I mean, as I mentioned to you, it should.
Yeah. A lot of things going on campus.
I mean, all you have to do is just drive up there or walk up there, and you'll be blown away by what's happening just from the physical appearance.
What's going on?
Well, we're doing an awful lot of capital construction. You know, the university was founded in 1963, started with the clubhouse of the old Belrive Country Club, and had the swimming pool there, and, you know, we met in laundromats and things like that. And a major part of the campus got built during the 60s. And we're now probably having more capital construction, certainly dollar-wise, over $125, $130 of construction at one time than we've had in the history of the institution.
And that might surprise a lot of people, because I think everybody knows that money is short, state funding is down. I think the numbers I've seen indicate down by about 10% since 2010.
Go ahead. No, you are so right. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're very creative. You know, I call it bootstrapping, and I can just run through how some of the creativity. For example, for the Science Learning Building, which is between the Science Complex and Natural Bridge Road, we're just not filling a few positions so we can make bond payments. It's a $32 million facility, so we're making $2 million bond payments over the next 30 years. Our optometry building, which is coming up quickly on Natural Bridge Road where the old osteopathic hospital used to be, there, we are having an additional student fee that the students voted for. We're not filling a few positions. We squirreled away some money from this college keeps its own tuition. So we're doing a partial bond issue, if you will, on that. The new business building we're going to break ground on soon. We've raised $10 million of private funds. The governor recently announced a match for that. So we're doing that. The Student Wellness and Recreation Center, they're charging themselves a fee for that, which they voted for in a referendum. And that building is just about done. $36 million facility. It's, you know, got an elevator, running track, climbing wall, swimming pool, a juice bar. I mean, you name it. It's all the bells and whistles. And then on top of all that, Natural Bridge Road is being fixed up by the Missouri Department of Transportation. That's a $20 million facility, or I shouldn't say facility, but, you know, a project. So everything, there's no cookie cutter approach to how we're doing this.
Hey, what's the impact in the classroom?
At this point, it's going to get better. I mean, we're not disturbing anything that's going on currently with the classrooms, but particularly with the Science Learning Building, what's going to happen when that gets finished is that now we can have the state-of-the-art for teaching laboratories, and so we can move into that. And when we do that, then we have some funds, $13 million from the state through a bond issue they had, plus another $8 million from our system, plus another $4 million we're finding somewhere that we're going to renovate Benton Hall, which is one of the very first science buildings. So while we move into the new teaching labs, we'll then do renovating in Benton. So it's all to the better for the students.
Well, it sounds like you're awash in cash. We just talk about all these millions of dollars that you're finding.
And we really don't have money. It's like that. What was that fable when I was a kid? The lady went into the floor of the when she scratched it, got flour or something, and made baked goods out of the dust from the floor or something like that. I mean, that's sort of us.
Well, it's glad to hear that you're keeping afloat. I think a lot of people might ask, though, Tom George, with the need to kind of manipulate your funds this way, what are you buying a golf course for?
Well, several things. First of all, the course became available at a price that was affordable. It's right next to the campus. And what it does is it extends our footprint to St. Charles Rock Road. It also ensures that it can remain as a golf course, you know, right now, and certainly green space, and that's what we want. And also, we had a private donor step up and buy it for us. Huh. So, you know, there were no state funds invested in this golf course.
Is it going to remain a golf course?
Yeah, in the foreseeable future, yes. I mean, it's being managed, and it's right now. Now, you know, there were a lot of signs around Belknor in particular saying, save the golf course. So the word now is play the golf course. We want your business.
Yeah, for years there have been rumors that that was going to be developed, that property. The Normandy Golf Club is
one. Well, I mean, if we had not bought it, that's something that could have happened. Anyway.
Speaking of Belknor, and while we're on the subject of property, some of the folks in Belknor are not too happy with the university because of the demolition of Incarnate Word.
Right.
How are you handling that?
Well, at this point, you know, we're in a hole at the moment. I mean, we did go through an RFP process, and we've chosen a firm to do that. And, you know, I'm still looking at it. And I know there's some people upset. There's lots of people that have come to me and say, please demolish. I mean, it's I'm getting it from all sides. And, you know, we have about a $300 million maintenance and repair issue or problem at the university. It's $1.3 billion for the system. We're $300 million. The Normandy St. Agnes Halls together represents $11 million. In other words, to get it up to code, and ISIS is a firm that actually went and assessed all our buildings, not just that one on campus, we would need $11 million. We don't have that. I mean, in fact, we're really overextended with all the other buildings we're doing. So this is not what I would say in part of our overall master plan. It's right at the edge of campus. It's right next to Incarnate Word Academy. In fact, that's where we got the buildings from originally, Incarnate Word Academy. So, but at this point, and my guess is with the Q&A, I'll probably get a call or two on that. We're taking a breath and just, you know, just looking at it again.
What would the property be used for if, in fact, demolition does go through?
It would be green space. It would be open green space, and you could then a great, you know, portal, if you will, to Incarnate Word Academy. But that's what it would be used for.
You mentioned earlier about all the whistles and bells that you're putting into some of the things that are going on there now. And I've read an article recently by Michelle Goldberg in The Nation. Are you familiar with that by any chance?
Not the article. I heard the name.
Okay. Well, basically what she was pointing out was that institutions such as yours, and public and private, all over the country are really going full tilt to put in all the whistles and bells they can to attract more students because the fact that everybody's suffering from financial problems.
You are right. I mean, you know, I look at our latest residence hall, Oak Hall. I mean, you know, that's the Taj Mahal. I mean, when I was a student back in, you know, we always say when I was. Okay, back in the 60s, you know, I lived in what was called a dormitory. In fact, dorm is a bad four-letter word. It was like a prison. But here we have suites and, you know, you know, kitchens, and we have a swimming pool at Oak Hall, and we have a fitness center and, you know, conference rooms. I mean, and then we have all sorts of living for different – we have apartment complexes, and you name it or dial it, we can do it. Yes, we are overextending, and that's one of the reasons we have the Wellness Recreation Center. Students want that. Students want a place with all the bells and whistles that they can go relax in, let off steam, work out, and exercise in.
She was suggesting that this is a great aid in recruiting, particularly out-of-state students, and that was desirable because they spend more. The tuition is higher for them.
Well, yes, you are correct. I mean, in fact, we hire outside recruiters to tap into the international market because, yes, international students and students from out of state. We have a few counties around Illinois that we give in-state tuition to, but the bulk of our out-of-state students are paying out-of-state tuition. You're right.
And that's helpful,
and,
obviously.
And it's helpful because that helps subsidize, actually. You know, once in a while, some people in the state will say, well, why do we want those students coming from out-of-state? Well, they help subsidize the university for those in-state that are paying the in-state tuition.
I'll just mention one other thing she pointed out, and then I'll leave Michelle Goldberg out of the conversation. But I think given your position and your knowledge of your field, this is interesting. She was saying that one of the problems with funding higher education across the country is the fact that it has become so conservative in so many places that Republican politicians are reluctant to fund institutions of liberal – where there's a liberal atmosphere.
Well, there is that, but I must say on our campus, it's really balanced. You tend to think of, yes, it's a bastion of liberalism, but we have a number of faculty that swing the other way, and they hold the feet of the liberals to the fire to make sure that on our campus we have a full balance of views and opinions, and that we try to do that on the campus.
And of course, the vast majority of your students are from this immediate area. You want those out-of-state students, but most of them here.
Yeah, I'd say about 80 5% of our students come from this area. And what's particularly interesting is they stay here. So we have, you know, we have over 90,000 alums now, which is amazing for an institution that was founded in 1963. And we have about 65,000-66,000 of them are right here, living and working in the St. Louis region.
That's a remarkable figure. Why do they stay here, do you think?
They like it. They like it. and we don't scare them off when they come to UMSL. I mean, when they come to UMSL, we make them like St. Louis even more. And we educate St. Louis, and we provide the workforce for St. Louis.
I also notice, in looking over the material about the University of Missouri St. Louis, that it ranks in the top 10 in many, many major categories, very important categories.
Oh, boy.
What are some of those?
I'm glad you brought that up, Don. I just love talking about that. Yeah. You know, U.S. News and World Report, we're consistently in the top 20 for our undergraduate program, International Business, Criminology, Criminal Justice. In the top 4 or 5 for the graduate program, academic analytics, which looks at faculty scholarship productivity, grants, contracts, and so forth. We're actually in the top 10 of publics in the nation for that. And then we have a number of individual programs that are ranked very highly. Counselor education is one of them. Information systems located in the College of Business Administration. We must have about 15 programs in the top 30 or 40 on that, which speaks to not only the faculty, but it also speaks to the graduate students and the undergraduate students that all participate in developing better research and more scholarship.
Are there any other institutions you can think of that can make this kind of claim?
Well, there are very few other institutions that are like us. I mean, a young urban, land-grant, public university, because, you know, we have a responsibility of reaching out to the community. So it's not only going into the ivory tower and churning out papers or getting grants and contracts. Mm-hmm. We've got to go out into the community and be engaged. That's something we have to do.
I should have asked this question. We were talking money a little while ago, but what about tuition costs? How have they
That's managed? One thing that have not gone up. Now, the students put a tax on themselves for the Wellness Recreation Center, but we have held tuition down. Probably more, less. I think we're among the bottom five, if you will, in the nation of institutions that have raised tuition. I mean, it's like right now, this last year, it was the Consumer Price Index, which was 0.8%, and that's barely an increase.
You know, you really have to give the students a lot of credit because they're signing on to a lot of the things you are doing and have to do to keep everything afloat, and they're apparently going right along with it.
Right. Well, they're very bright students, and they see the big broad picture. I mean, I'm just continually amazed at our students.
Tom George is our guest. He's the chancellor at the University of Missouri St. Louis. We're going to take a break and then come back and continue our questioning. If you'd like to be a part of this discussion, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation with the University of Missouri St. Louis Chancellor Tom George. Tom, we talked about many of the things that are so positive about the university. What are the challenges as you see them moving forward?
Well, of course, you know, financial is a challenge. Yeah, sure. And one of the reasons it's a challenge for us developing and delivering programs is we're trying to keep the tuition as low as possible. And that's one of the strong features of a public research university is that you can have tuition kept as low as possible. There'll be challenges along with opportunities as these new buildings get completed. I think I see it more as opportunities than challenges. But, you know, finances right now is a challenge. I think the public sentiment is there for education, particularly public education. So I don't think we're having a battle there. But, you know, you look at other states, we're actually fortunate to be in Missouri. I mean, Wisconsin, you know, George Walker, the governor there, is looking at $300 million cuts to higher education. Illinois has a budget much worse than ours. So in a sense, I feel blessed that we're in Missouri.
You know, education does seem to be a whipping boy nationally. Politicians, you know this and I know this, politicians always say they're for education and they want to support and all the rest of it. You know, now there are a lot of them out there that want to eliminate the Department of Education. There's cuts all over the country, as previously mentioned.
Well, what in many state governments, higher education often becomes the budget balancer. And you have to – certain things you have to deal with first. And once you deal with those, then to try to balance the budget, what's left is higher education. So, you know, that's why we've experienced so many cuts since 2000. And part of it is just financial, what's there in the state treasury. But right now, you know, things are, I think, are starting to turn around. Looking up, we got a 1.3% increase, actually, this year from the governor. That's better than a decrease.
Well, and the good news is, I just have in my notes here that Missouri has experienced 7.5% more revenue as after the tax collections.
That's right.
Than was expected. That's good.
That's good. So I say I think this is a good state to be in. Certainly, a lot better than a number of other states that we can name, particularly in the Midwest.
Let's take a couple of calls. Tom George is our guest. We'll start by bringing in Ivy, who's calling from University City. Ivy, go ahead. You're on the air with Chancellor George.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for taking my call today.
Sure.
And I'm really excited to have this opportunity to speak with Chancellor George. Three of my four children have attended UMSL, and a problem that all three of them have had at one time or another, some more than others, is the number of classes that get canceled. You know, the kids sign up for the class, it's canceled, and the problem really creates a burden financially and how many years the child needs to go to college, because sometimes classes are only offered in either the fall or summer, or I guess spring semester. And I was wondering, how can we have these kind of degree programs on the book in UMSL if kids can't, you know, get through college in 4 years?
Well, I'm sorry to hear about that. Is there a particular area of disciplines where there tends to be this cancellation that you're aware of?
Yes, we've had one of my older son had a lot of problems in both the criminology, which he eventually graduated in, and also computer programming, and he recently changed the focus of his major to make sure he could get out within another year. It's just been abysmal in the sense that, you know, he's had to go for like 5 years to get, you know, if you're a full-time student, it can seem in 4 years you should be able to graduate with degrees.
Well, I appreciate your mentioning this, Ivy. I'll look into this some more, particularly looking at criminology or criminal justice and computer science. These are two very popular majors, as you would probably guess. And with the criminology or criminal justice, we get rated a lot by other universities because our faculty are among the best in the country. And so, you know, we're always scrambling to make sure that we have a full cadre of faculty that we can offer the courses. But, you know, that's something I'm glad you've brought it to my attention, and it's something I can look at more carefully.
Thank you for the call, Ivy. How did it happen that UMSL, here in the middle of the country, creates and generates a top-flight criminology department?
Well, you get it. It's all really with the faculty, and the faculty development. And I think it helped to have some strong partnerships with municipality police forces, and particularly with St. Louis Police. And our faculty have developed very strong relationships with them. And then once it feeds on itself, because once it becomes well-known, then some of the very best students in the country flock to that student, to that to program. And, you know, and they're basically all rock stars in there, you know. And, you know, if you need an opinion on something related to crime, you know, CNN, you'll see one of our faculty. Of course, we hired Don Isom, who used to be the chief of police for St. Louis and is one of our doctoral, you know, awardees. And so
it's a great resource for us, I must tell you, as I'm sure you know.
I know that.
We rely very heavily on those folks. Let's take another call. We'll try to bring in Justin. He's calling from Union, Missouri. Go ahead, Justin.
Hi, this is Justin from Union, Missouri. I'm a proud alumni of UMSL and an education major. And I just wanted to speak to the non-traditional students at UMSL. And I was one of those. I spent 5 years as a dropout before going back. And I just wanted to commend them on accommodating non-traditional students and making us feel comfortable even if we weren't the normal 20-somethings that fill most of the classrooms.
You know, you use the word non-traditional. You are the traditional student at UMSL. I mean, more and more of our students, our average age is 28 years old. Many of our students are working part-time, full-time, raising families. I mean, what you just described is, and it's interesting, you look at some of the CEOs in the area that were UMSL grads, they were on the tenure plan. that's the type of, we cater to what you call the non-traditional student, which is really as much traditional with us.
And many of them would be veterans, of course.
Oh, we've got a very strong program for veterans. We have a veteran center that's extremely strong. And absolutely. And thanks for mentioning that, Don.
What does the veteran center do?
Well, it's a resource for people that are veterans to go get a special advice, make sure they're in the right courses, an opportunity to interact with other veterans. And then what it does is it attracts people who are not veterans to the center. And we have all sorts of events that take place there. So I think it ties the veterans more into the campus community. Before we had that, I think the veterans felt a bit more isolated, if you will, from the campus community. They're not now. They're part of it.
You talk about some of those students, non-traditional students, being on the 10-year plan. That can get expensive. I just want to get into the issue of student debt. That's the other side of
I was saying the 10-year plan, I didn't mean they're full-time students for 10 years.
I understand that.
I mean, many of them will take one course. They'll take two courses. Now, we do make a little advertisement for us. We have evening programs. And, in fact, we've got the most robust evening programs at just about anywhere I know. Most of our majors go in at 5:30 and get a full degree by going in the evenings. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of all over the map.
Well, let's discuss this debt issue because it is a major problem for higher education. What can the university, the institution itself, do to help alleviate some of this burden?
Well, what we're increasingly doing is putting more scholarship dollars available for students. So we're doing that. Our advancement team is very aggressive in terms of raising scholarship dollars. I mean, it's all in providing resources to the students. And then proper advising. Often students will come and they have a difficulty, particularly with mathematics. And we've got special learning centers now that can deal with that. So hopefully students won't get waylaid or held up by not succeeding in mathematics. But more scholarship dollars, and we're very aggressive in raising more scholarship dollars. And also, I really thank a lot of corporations in the area that have stepped up and given us more scholarship dollars, particularly for North County.
It's really mind-boggling to think that student debt in this country is more – the number is greater than credit card debt.
Well, I mean, a student I'd say about three-quarters of our students do graduate with some debt, and it's upwards of $20,000. Now, if you get a good job – let's say you're an engineer or something like that, you can probably wipe that out in a short amount of time. But not every student can do that. So it's a concern for us.
Yeah. Back to the phone. Sister Helen will join us from St. Charles. Sister, thank you for being with us.
My comment, and I want Mr. George to know that I'm not Sister Helena. I'm Helen. I am an Incarnate Word.
Oh, Helena
sister.
Monahan from Incarnate Word Academy. That's not
right.
You, right? Okay.
No. So you can rest easy.
And she's a good friend of mine.
I know she is, and I'm on the board there also. Yeah. But I just wanted to clarify one thing that you said. You did not buy the convent from the academy. You bought it from the Incarnate Word Sisters, and it's a separate identity.
You are correct, and I'm sorry. I should have said that. The academy just came out. Yes.
Right. Yeah, I can understand because you're doing a lot of dealings. But I just thought if some people hear that, they're going to think,
No. Thank you. Thank you for correcting that.
You're very welcome.
Take care
and have a good day.
You can wrap him on the knuckles with a ruler, Sister Helen.
Well, I never did that. I never had to. I have a very stern eye.
thank you.
Okay.
Thank you
you're
so much
welcome.
For the call. We've got another call from this one from Belnor concerning Incarnate Word. Let's take that and then move on. Dan, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, I just want to say I missed the beginning of the program, but I organized the petition to save the convent. I'm thrilled to hear that there's any delay or hold on its demolition. I'd love to hear more about details as they move forward. But I just want to remind all the listeners that about a year ago, UMSL promised us the same thing, that we'd have a hold and that it would be looking into what to do with the convent. And I just want to make sure that we continue to hold administrators like Chancellor George accountable. They're public officials that use public money, and they're using public assets, and that's why our petition has worked so far, and that's why I'm putting it on hold, and we hope they keep holding the community within their conversations, and they keep working with us rather than trying to work around us.
Dan, I really appreciate that. Dan Riley, I assume, correct? I appreciate that, and that's what we're trying to do. You know, I'm balancing a lot of budget issues, and what you didn't hear maybe when earlier in the conversation is we have a $300 million problem of maintenance and repair. The system is $1.3 billion, but $300 million, and you know, we're trying to see how do we move forward with that. And at the same time, we're maintaining a lot of other old buildings as well. As you probably know, the Provincial House, the Villa, buildings similar to Normandy and St. Agnes Halls. But yes, I appreciate all that you are doing, and public officials should be accountable.
And do have a responsibility to the people that surround them.
Absolutely.
As well.
And we take it very seriously. I know sometimes people think we're not listening or we're not doing that. No, absolutely we're listening and we're taking it seriously.
Another call, this one from Donna in St. Louis. Donna, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to say thank you very much, all of University of Missouri St. Louis, all of University of Missouri. I was in a very fine situation as a critical care nurse, married to a physician, then went through a life transfer, went into Webster University anesthesia school, and decided that really wasn't going to work for me. So it was UMSL and all those wonderful people who took me in, kind of like it in my first year at Webster, and transitioned me well into a family nurse practitioner program that I exceeded in. I'm now a pain management nurse practitioner, and I was so glad to be able to pay for my own children's accelerated UMSL credits that they took in Fenton with their public school district there so that they could move ahead in Columbia, and now one is looking at a law degree. And I just have to say, your budgets are well balanced as far as I've seen, and thank you so much for everything you do for all of us.
Boy, I love hearing you talk, and particularly yourself personally with the nurse practitioner. You know, we now give a doctorate in a nurse practitioner as well, and
yeah.
I think it's a tremendous field, and I think, you know, everything you've said and about you and your family, I just couldn't be more pleased.
Donna, thank you so much for the call. What about the accelerator program? I know that you count those students from high schools who are involved in taking courses or getting credits amongst your student population.
Right. Yeah. The program, there is an accelerator program within the nursing program that you can come in and move more quickly. What you're talking about is our so-called advanced credit.
Advanced credit.
So that's a different program. And the advanced credit, we have students in the high schools taking our courses. We have about over 4,000 of those students that are doing that.
So that added to your population, but that's significant.
Right. But I mean, they're a fraction of an FTE. You know, they'll take a course, and so it's a fraction of an FTE.
Moving on to another subject, online education seems to be establishing something of a foothold across the country. Is that a challenge for you? Is it competition for you? Is it here to stay? Is it going to change higher education?
I call it an opportunity. Mm-hmm. It's not like we are going to become an online university. We continue to increase the number of online programs, online courses. And there's a number of majors now you can get completely online if you choose to do that. But we're still a bricks and mortar institution. And, you know, we're not going to continue forever increasing online at the expense of face-to-face contact. You know, we do an awful lot of, because we're in the metropolitan areas, we do what's called hybrids. And the hybrids is a mixture of online and face-to-face. And we can do that because we're in a major metropolitan area. Where you see more exclusively online programs is an institution that's reaching out beyond the region or someone that's very isolated as an institution. But we've capitalized on that. We offered the first online MBA program in the state a number of years ago. It really wasn't 100% online. It was hybrid, and it was a mix, and it worked very well.
How else is today's digital world changing higher education?
Well, I mean, it changes it in all sorts of ways. I mean, you know, when I used to be lecture to 800 students when I taught general chemistry many, many years ago, and I did it with a chalkboard. You know, and actually, that was good. That's not a bad way of doing things. I couldn't speak any more quickly than I could write with that chalk, but almost everyone now does it with PowerPoint, with videos. I mean, so just even in the lecture format, the way we teach English and mathematics, we use computers to do that. I mean, the list goes on and on. We're utilizing technology. I remember when I was teaching freshman chemistry, the hand calculator came out. People said, oh, what are you going to do? I said, let them bring it in. Bring it in. Instead of memorizing multiplication tables, you're going to know how to push buttons, and they can program everything they want in that. Now, my exams are going to be more creative thinking rather than memorization because I know they've got that calculator with them. So we roll with it.
Your background, of course, is in the sciences. Are you noticing any increase in interest among students in the STEM courses? It's such a problem in this country, generating that kind of interest.
It is, but we're working at it. Now, I think our new science learning building is a step in that direction. If we have better facilities, I think they're going to be more interested in going into those fields. And, you know, STEM includes computer science as well. And, you know, there's a group that are pushing hard on STEAM as well. I mean, we don't want to forget the arts and the humanities because they all work together intertwined for making a successful scientist.
Yeah. Have to take a break. We'll do that and come back, continue our conversation with the University of Missouri-St. Louis Chancellor, Tom George. Back in a second. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We resume our conversation with the Chancellor at the University of Missouri-St. Louis, Tom George. Off air, we were talking about the arts, and we have a caller from Overland who wants to get into that subject, and that would be Dennis. Go ahead, Dennis. You're on the air.
Yes. Thanks for the show. I was thinking that I didn't know if there's any money left in the DESLE funds that have been there for musicians and artists as well. And I thought that maybe an artist in residency at that building and then having St. Louis musicians who are quite often don't have a whole lot of money, but maybe they could live in those buildings and be paying into, you know, keeping some of the upkeep. And plus, you would maybe be able to have people from outside, large groups, be able to come in and... And work with the university.
Well, thanks for the thought. You know, in terms of the DESLE funds, they're actually controlled by the faculty that are the DESLE faculty members. We have one in music in particular that controls those funds, who has been very generous in the area with those funds. I mean, it's an interesting thought that you bring up, and it's something certainly I'm happy to think about. But, you know, I don't have another kitty of funds associated with the DESLE Collaborative Vision that I control. It's really controlled by the faculty. But having said that, the faculty are often open to new ideas.
And you would tend to tilt that way anyway, being a musician yourself.
I would tilt that. I'm very partial to music, yes.
And do a lot of performing around town.
Yeah, I'm performing tonight at Aristo State University. I'm the warm-up act for Pamela Rose, a vocalist, and Nancy Kranzberg and I are going to do St. Louis Blues.
Well, I hope you have a full turnout, and I hope it's recorded.
We do have a full turnout. Yeah. It was going to be in the Emerson Theater. It's sold out, and we're having to move it to the Henry Givens Auditorium in the other building.
Well, that's great. Well, congratulations to you on that. We have a number of your CDs around here. I wish we could pull one out and play a little bit at some point. We'll do that next time perhaps. Getting into another area that I think we need discussing is Ferguson. Your neighbor, Ferguson. Last time we got together, we were talking about what the university could do and how the university could be involved in some of the repair work that's necessary. What has the university's involvement been?
I mean, I'll tell you, our faculty, staff, and students have just stepped up to the plate major time. We have a number of organizations and programs already in place before Ferguson happened. I talk about Ferguson happened. I'm talking about August 9th. We have the Missouri Institute of Mental Health. Is on our campus, Center for Trauma Recovery, Community Psychological Service, the Wyman Center associated with child advocacy. I mean, there are a lot of programs that accelerated tremendously in what they're doing and doing it in the Ferguson community. Our College of Education has gone into the schools in a much more aggressive fashion that are Riverview and, you know, Ferguson, Florissant, Jennings, and so forth. Then we've been a haven, if you will, for discourse. And we've had many forums. The Ferguson Commission meets regularly on our campus. We're trying to reach out as much as possible. Our various courses, we've had opportunities for instructors and students to develop programs that are associated with Ferguson into the curriculum itself. So I can't say enough about the campus of how we've responded.
How about the student body? It's a very diverse group that you have there. Mm. What has the impact been down on the student level? I mean, the average guy and gal.
I'd say it's been a positive impact. I mean, it's concern, of course, and a number of our students are demonstrators. When you've seen protests and demonstrators, those are UMSL students out there. Those often UMSL faculty, but you know, they see it as an opportunity for us to move forward, strengthen ourselves and become even better, and certainly an opportunity for us to reach out even more in the community. And I do want to tip my hat to industries in the community that have given us more scholarship dollars for students that are in North County schools to come to UMSL. I really appreciate that.
All right. I'm just reading an email here from this is really not a question, but we wanted to thank the chancellor for his support of student radio. And, of course, we would support that as well.
The U. We call it the U, and it's a webcast. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of that going on
these
days.
Mm-hmm.
I was also surprised, Chancellor, to see about the university's involvement in Kuwait. I didn't realize there was an international component.
Well, we have a huge international component. I just got back from Oman, actually.
Really?
And we started a university there a number of years ago. I tip my hat to Joel Glassman, who directs our international studies program. And yes, we did one in Kuwait as well. And our initial thrust have been in the areas of business, but we're now branching out into the sciences. These are private universities. And in fact, the one in Oman was the first private university in that country. But these are very robust programs that UMSL has its stamp in the Middle East.
I'm surprised that I missed that. I know that Webster University gets a lot of attention for its overseas campuses. Nothing like that per se going on with UMSL.
Yeah, no, I mean, we have we started a campus or started a program in Nanjing with Nanjing University. In fact, here's a fact that I'm not sure everyone knows. Nanjing is St. Louis' sister city. It started because of UMSL, and it started because of the programs they're doing in Nanjing.
And a partnership with local universities. I noticed that you're in cahoots with Washington University in some areas.
We're in cahoots with all the campuses here, and we have a cooperative engineering program, for example, with WashU. At the bench level, many faculty have interactions. And then, of course, we're a partner in Cortex, the Center for Emerging Technologies. That, of course, with the Washington University, SLU, BJC, the Missouri Botanical Garden. I mean, through the DESLE collaborative vision that was just mentioned earlier, you know, we have interactions with the zoo, interactions with the art museum, interactions with the symphony. I mean, these are all parts of what we do.
When we talk about interactions, what kinds of actions are we?
Cooperative programs. Yeah. I mean, for example, take the garden. Through our Center for Tropical Ecology, it's now called the Whitney Harris World Ecology Center. We've got programs in Madagascar, programs in Central America with their scientists and our faculty and directing student research. I mean, it's very interactive.
This doesn't sound like a commuter college. When you start talking this way,
it amazes me I mean, if you look at our student body, we have about 1,300 living on campus. The rest are commuters. You're right. Well, some of them live in housing and around the university. It's not university housing, but yeah, the majority of our students are commuters. But yeah, we do it all. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, in terms of the international outreach component, in terms of the interactions with the entities, and also with I don't want to leave out community colleges or technical colleges. You know, 2/3 to 3/4 of our first time students are transfers. They're not coming right out of high school. So we have a very strong partnership with the community colleges.
Let's take another call. We'll bring in Bob calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Bob.
Mr. George?
Go ahead.
Hello, Bob.
Tom George, a friend of mine, I just wanted to call and say that, during the time that I was on the Board of Trustees for St. Louis Community College, I enjoyed my interaction with you a great deal, but something just a little bit more personal I wanted to pass along. My son, Andrew, got his bachelor's degree from UMSL, got his master's degree with a master's in English from UMSL, and now he's teaching full-time at the University of Arkansas at Monticello. And that all got started at UMSL, and I enjoy my friendship with you, Mr. George, and thank you for what UMSL does for all the Metropolitan students.
Well, Bob, I've enjoyed interacting with you, and congrats to your son. I mean, that's a great success story.
It sure is.
Bob, thank you for the call. Another issue that is prominent in higher education today, and we have to bring it up, and that's the issue of sexual assault on campus. It happens, and it's happened on your campus, and it's happened on others. There was a summit conference at Mizzou, at headquarters down in Columbia last week, looking into this subject. Was UMSL involved in that, and what can you tell us about it?
We weren't involved in that directly, and I think they were part of the driver that was fraternities and sororities that there. We have a system-wide initiative launched by the president, Tim Wolf, and actually he's become nationally known for this, of looking at Title IX much more seriously than we have for all the campuses. We don't nearly have the volume on our campus, particularly, I guess, maybe being a commuter campus, what have you. But this is an area that we're revving up, taking extremely seriously. We've had outside consultants come in. We have an official Title IX officer, and then we have a team that looks into this. So, you know, in terms of sexual assaults or anything that comes under Title IX, Title IX is just not athletics. It's very broad.
Well, I think people are beginning to learn that.
Yes.
Thanks in some part to Senator McCaskill, who is very, very active
and
on this issue.
And we have been working very closely with her, particularly Tim Wolf and others at our system administration. As she develops her protocols, I think Missouri's probably had as major a role in that as any other institution.
Really?
Yeah.
Back to the phones. This time it'll be Gina calling from St. Louis. Gina, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. You may have addressed this earlier. I caught the show late, but I'd like to talk to you about the rising tuition costs. Now, I know the tuition costs are going up around the country and around the state. I returned to school. I'm an older student, and I returned to school last spring to be in the nursing program. I had dropped out for a variety of reasons. But one of the reasons was I had to look at it and say, wow, I have $40,000 in debt for 5 semesters of school to pay off when I'm 50 years old. But your students, your younger students too, your 20-year-olds, your 21-year-olds, they're going to have $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 of debt. How do they start a life when they've got that much debt hanging over themselves? I came from a large family. We did not have a lot of money. 7 out of 8 of us got to go to state universities without any debt. I paid my entire tuition in the 1980s working part-time. Can you address this? Can you do anything about that?
Well, first of all, let me give a reason why we have the situation and then try to, you know, give you a sense of what we're trying to do. You know, there's been a trade-off between what the state has put into the university and what students have to pay. And since 1999 and 2000, the state support has gone down in a major way. Initially, to react to that, the university had double-digit increases in tuition. We've gotten away from that now. And in fact, our tuition increase this past year was only 0.8%. In fact, we're limited by Senate Bill 389 to the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, for raising tuition. So having said that, what you said is also true, particularly in some disciplines, and nursing is one of them, that you tend to ring up higher debts. And if you're in disciplines like law or vet med, it gets even worse. We're looking hard to raise more and more dollars for scholarships for students. And nursing is one of the areas that we're targeting because we do appreciate, you know, the situation that you've mentioned. I wish and the state now is looking better in the state treasurer. And if they can start putting more dollars in the state back into higher education, we can ensure that the tuition doesn't go up very much.
Well, we were talking about this before. I don't think we talked about how this has impacted faculty. Have you had to impose a wage freeze?
I didn't do a wage freeze. What I did in past years, what I've done is I've created a central pool. So I said, okay, I'm going to create a central pool, and you then can, and we'll say the central pool is 2 or 3 or 4%, and then you can draw on that for salary increases. This year, I'm not doing a freeze on salary increases. I'm just not creating a central pool. So if a unit or an area does want to give raises or whatever, as long as they have the money to do that, they can do that. So it's not really a raise freeze. It's just we're not creating a pool.
Right. I also have a note here indicating that there is some concern that because of the financial squeeze that you find yourself in, there's more of a reliance on adjunct faculty as opposed to the tenured faculty.
Well, okay, to be honest with you, yeah, full disclosure, yes, we do rely heavily on adjunct faculty, but that's not a negative. I mean, I know a lot of our adjunct faculty, they're outstanding. I mean, they know their discipline. They know their area. So just because you have an adjunct faculty member doesn't mean you're getting bad instruction. You know, you're getting, in our case, outstanding instruction.
But these are the kinds of things that have to happen with the 10% drop in revenue over the last few years.
And that's what happened. We when I came here, we had 285 tenure-track faculty. My goal was to get to 335. We got to 335 about 3 or 4 years ago. We're back down to 285 now because of budget cuts.
And would you like to go back to 335? Yeah, is that the plan?
Absolutely, and that's part of my plan, yes.
let's take another call. Brian joins us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Brian.
Hi, Don. I'm just calling. I missed the beginning of your show. I'm a realtor in the area around Umsel. Family live there. Parents still live there. Sister, grandma, two aunts. So I pretty good pulse on what's going on in the neighborhood. And I heard Dan Riley call earlier. And, you know, he has to be very diplomatic and say that he puts on a good show, that everybody's getting along. Well, I can tell you that the feel that my family has and lots of people have in the neighborhood is intimidation directly from the leadership of the university. And to say that we work together and all this kinds of things I've heard in a little bit, it's just not true to the people who live there. And it's just very disheartening to see something that people care so much about and love their community, that their community has, you know, helped Umsel more than Umsel has helped them. And I just don't know why the insistence on destroying it. Frankly,
destroying what
what they want to do with their neighborhood, how they have a vision for their neighborhood, how their property value will decrease as these, you know, as you've bought fraternity houses and don't keep them up all along the front side of Natural Bridge, how you've let a beautiful building, you say, deteriorate, which you could get $600,000 for, but you rejected that offer and now you're spending $800,000. I mean, I'm not a economist, but why spend more to tear something down than you can get for it?
Brian,
if it's just going to be an empty field.
Time's getting away, Brian. We want the chancellor to respond.
Okay,
but
yeah.
When you speak of intimidation, what are you speaking of there? Threats of having property values go down, that sort of thing.
No, many people have told to me that they've been laughed at by many people when they've tried to talk about it and things like that. And, you know, this is just the way we're going to do it, and that's how it is, regardless of what they want.
Let's give the chancellor a chance to respond to that.
I'm sorry that you feel that way because, you know, I take the relationships that we have with the neighborhood very seriously. I live in the neighborhood. As you may know, I live in Belrive Acres. And, you know, I'm a part of that neighborhood, and I take it very seriously. We don't agree always on everything, but certainly, you know, I interact with a lot of people in the region locally.
Have you heard this before, this intimidation factor?
No, not per se. So yeah. I'm sorry to hear this.
We've got a little over a minute left. It may not be fair to put this question with so little time, but what's on the drawing board? What can we look forward to in the weeks, months, and perhaps years ahead?
Well, just in terms of the construction going on, and then within the next 2 years, and some earlier than that, of course, having it completed, I think we're just going to see a facelift for the campus, and I think that's going to be very exciting for our students, very exciting for the community, of course, our faculty and staff.
Do you sense any competition from the for-profit colleges that have emerged?
Not really. You know, we have Western Governors University here, University of Phoenix. You know, I know their people. We periodically get together and talk. And, you know, I don't actually see any what I call severe competition.
Is that a healthy entrant into the higher education community?
Well, it's another way. It's another form, if you will, of an opportunity for students. I mean, I think the bulk of the students tend to do what we're doing in this community, as opposed to other forms that are totally online. But you know, it's just another dial for the student on their, you know, on their opportunities for higher education.
Now, I think of what happened with Corinthian, basically went bankrupt, and now the government's going to have to bail out the students.
Some do, but yeah. and other, there's colleges too that go bankrupt as well. I mean,
yeah. Well, we're going to have to end it there. Tom George, thanks so much for being with us. Do you want to do one more plug for your appearance tonight?
I just appreciate your line. Yeah. It's 7 o'clock, you know, Pamela Rose, she's a singer, but I'll be the opening act with Nancy Kranzberg. A quick 5 to 10 minutes, that's all.
All righty. Well, thank you, Tom George, for being with us, and we'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Yeah, thank you, Don.
That's it for us for today. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with St. Louis County Executive Steve Stenger. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.